Hello and welcome to the Trip On podcast, in which we combine architecture, entertainment, and urban life. My name is Lee.
And my name is Alex, and we are an architect and themed entertainment professional who travel a lot, and we are also interested in urban development and attractions.
To get a visual impression of what we discuss in this episode, check our Instagram at TripOnPodcast. This time we have an interesting episode because it's going to be our first episode in the series Trip On Entertainment. And for that we have to give you also a background as to how do we get here. So first of all, let's talk about the trail of the last episode that we did. And this episode was about the city of Dubai.
To sum up the episode about Dubai, we can say that it's a city that offers a lot in terms of leisure and the free time. There is a lot to do and everyone will find something for themselves, and that's why we also decided to visit the parks, because Dubai offers a lot of theme parks.
It's a kind of a weird experience to be in winter time and then you actually walk out the door in the morning and it's very warm, so you really need sunglasses here every day. And this is actually the, let's say, the more colder period in Dubai, so it just remains a weird thing to be in this Christmas atmosphere sometimes, but still be in such a hot city. Are you getting used to the weather?
Yes, I think you can slowly get used to the weather, but it depends because each month is a bit different. Right now we have winter, as Celine mentioned, but in the summertime it might be unbearable. And I know from the people that they don't go outside, so I'm pretty curious about this aspect. However, right now it's okay. Like you said, you just need sunglasses or sunscreen to protect yourself. But it's quite nice to walk around in the sunny and warm weather.
Also, we have to mention that we have spent a bit of time to make the apartment here, Alex's apartment, a bit more cozy. Because when I came here, it was quite empty. We've been shuffling some stuff. Slowly it is becoming a bit more livable and cozy, and it starts to feel like a home.
Yes, I do really appreciate your input, because since I arrived, I didn't really have time to work on the apartment. And this wasn't really the priority because of the training before and a new job. But right now it was a time to start thinking how to make it a bit more pleasant, and a little bit of things and a little bit of interior decoration, and it feels much more cozy and homey. So it's super nice.
We did see a lot in Dubai itself, and even though you can maybe call Dubai in some way already a theme park, because it does feel like a theme park in many ways, there are very decorated lamp posts, and there are flowers, and there are fences that you would kind of expect in something like a Disney World. But besides the city itself, there is an actual theme park that we have been to today, and that is IMG Worlds of Adventure.
Yes, and to give you a little bit of the background, the park was built by Ilas and Mustafa Gelardi Group as part of the City of Arabia Development Project, and as a part of a Dubai Land. And IMG Worlds of Adventure opened its gates to guests on August 15th in 2016. However, its story is a little bit bumpy, and I think Lee will tell you a bit more into details about it.
Yeah, I think what is interesting also as a background is that I was in Dubai in 2015, which was while the IMG park was already being built, and it was already long in development back then. And of course, it was just before opening, so I was not able to experience it back then, but it did leave me very curious as to what it is like and how Dubai does their theme parks, obviously because of my job also. And yes, like Alex mentioned, it was a very, very bumpy road. I think this project is very well known for what it is right now, but it also is very well known for what it could have been. So to give you a bit of background, the IMG Group, so the company behind it, already exists since 1940. And it's a really big company. They have been doing a lot of different stuff, like many of those big investment groups in the Middle East. Very diverse. So they're, amongst other things, they're in real estate. They're doing driving lessons. They have car repair shops. They have kitchen stores. They have interior stores, and they're doing real estate development for residential areas. But on another note, Alex, I have an interesting question about this, because can you tell one interesting fact about the Dubai taxis?
Of course. Dubai taxis, they have different roof colors and you can choose them depending on your preference. Most of them are state owned, but for example, if you choose the taxi with the pink roof, it should be driven by the lady. One of the colors indicates that the taxi is a bit cheaper. There is, I think, the green one. It probably means that it's more
ecological.
Ecological, exactly. So yes, you can distinguish the car by the roof color.
So, fun fact, IMG Group is the owner of the orange-roofed taxis.
Oh, really? I didn't know that, actually.
Yeah, it's really funny. I looked it up, and apparently the company is called Metro Taxi, and this is part of the IMG Group. So it shows you that this is a massive company. And even though the IMG Worlds of Adventure is a really, really big project with a massive investment behind it, I think it's only a relative small part of what they are actually doing as a company. It was a really long road to get to this point. So originally, IMG was an initiator of a project that was called City of Arabia. City of Arabia was supposed to be part of Dubai Land. And I don't think you can talk about the theme parks in Dubai without talking about Dubai Land. This was supposed to be an absolute mega project that was presented in 2003. A 260 square kilometer piece of land. It was supposed to be north of $60 billion as an investment. Entirely, this whole thing was supposed to make Walt Disney World look small. It was like almost double the size of Walt Disney World. So you can imagine how insane that is. Did you ever hear about this project, Alex, before, you know, even knowing me?
No, to be honest, before I didn't hear anything of that. But since I've joined the company that we worked for, I've heard a little bit of the insights because people were talking about it.
And when I tell you about this, it really does sound like a project that fits in the Dubai story, right?
Yeah, for sure.
So the Dubai Land project was partly a sports city, a retail and entertainment hub, culture center with a lot of museums, and obviously a whole selection of theme parks. Some really famous names actually come up because it was supposed to have a Six Flags, a Universal Studios, a Paramount Pictures park, a DreamWorks Animation park, a Legoland, and a Marvel-based park. So you can already guess and estimate how immense this project was, because there is no place in the world where those theme parks exist next to each other. So IMG was supposed to build what was called the Restless Planet, which was kind of a natural history project. Plus, they were supposed to be building the Mall of Arabia, which was supposed to become, ironically, the largest mall in the world. And also the Elite Towers, obviously residential and office towers for the rich people. And the whole thing was set to open in 2008, but the entire Dubai Land project collapsed around 2008, 2009 because of the economic crisis. And the interesting thing is that, yes, the project was scrapped and we never saw the Dubai Land as we have seen it back in the days. But some of the projects that were announced and some of the investors behind the projects actually did take their plans into the future. And some projects started to pop up here and there in Dubai or around Dubai. And you would still be able to see them now. So, for example, the Miracle Garden. Do you know what it is, Alex?
Yes, it is a garden with different flowers and installations, and you can just buy a day ticket and go and visit it.
Yeah, it's really like a family attraction, you know.
It's
actually a really weird thing that it is a garden of flowers in the desert.
Yes, but to give you the scale of it, for example, you have the plane shape installation, and it's like a sculpture. So it's quite big, I would say, in the scale.
Actually, that's an interesting thing. Back in 2015, when I was in Dubai, the Miracle Garden was the only project that was built from the whole Dubai Land project. So I was actually able to visit it. And it was, let's say, not exactly my taste. It was a bit kitsch. But besides the Miracle Garden, there is a Legoland, which is now part of the Dubai Parks and Resorts Group. There is a Global Village, and this was still a development of the Global Village that was supposed to be built in Dubai Land. And some of the projects that were supposed to be in those theme parks actually found their position, found their place in Motion Gate. And this is also interesting because Motion Gate is on our list, right?
But also Global Village.
Yes, Global Village is also on the list. And that's a very interesting one because Global Village is not so much a theme park, but they call it a cultural theme park. So this is something you do know, right? You heard about it.
Yes, it's a village with different countries and you can experience different culture and food from there. So I think we're going to check it out during your stay as well.
Yeah, it sounds really interesting to me. And Global Village is also, I think, something that that does pretty well when it comes to marketing, because apparently it is very well visited and it's quite famous. So it's nice to see that some of those projects did see the light of day.
Mm-hmm.
The IMG group, they were not done with this. They announced that they were going to build IMG Worlds of Adventure. And they were set to open that in 2016. And it was actually a new project. But there is this rumor that Dubai Land was always supposed to open with a Marvel-based theme park. And it's not a surprise that IMG Worlds of Adventure has a Marvel-based zone in there. In 2016, right at the moment when they opened IMG Worlds of Adventure, they also announced that they were going to build IMG Worlds of Legends, which was another indoor theme park that was supposed to be right next to it. And they announced that it would include Ubisoft IPs, amongst which Assassin's Creed and Just Dance, Saban, which is a company from Japan, who is the IP holder of Power Rangers, for example, Mattel, who is very famous for Barbie, Hot Wheels, Bob the Builder, and Thomas and Friends. And it was supposed to have a Pokemon area. So that would have been massive. And then it was also supposed to have an anime zone, which included Dragon Ball Z and additional Cartoon Network. So that's a whole lot of information. And you see that this park has so much to talk about. And I think that is a nice bridge towards our actual visit to IMG. And for that, we go into our segment called The Head, The Heart, and The Base. To give you a little bit of a reminder, the head is the first impression that we had from an experience. And then the heart is the theme of the experience, the very core. And then the base of the experience, so the trail. What do we actually take from the experience? And this is something we will talk obviously more about in the next episode. So first, the head, the first impression. How was it, Alex?
Firstly, when we took the taxi to get to the park, we could see that it's quite far from the city center and it took us about half an hour to get there, which was quite difficult, I think, to do it by the bus. So we didn't even consider this option.
When you drive up to the IMG World of Adventure Hall, you still pass what you can maybe call a bit of a ghost land. It's still very empty. There's a lot of infrastructure built, but it seems like the actual residential areas, or let's say the bigger real estate projects, haven't been built really. Did you also notice that?
Yes, maybe to describe it in the easiest way, it's just like driving to the desert, and it's a project located on the desert, in the middle of nowhere, I would say.
Yeah, you really feel that there was supposed to be a lot more around it, basically. And the fact that it opened in 2016 and nothing has really happened since then, it's remarkable. Also, when we drove up to the hall, we could see very, very long stretches of fencing with printed banners on it. And the banner still had announcements for IMG Worlds on it, with largest indoor theme park in the world written on it. And those banners, they were completely faded by the sun. So I have the feeling that they've been hanging there for a long time.
And once you drive to the hall, you have to drive through massive parking lot and insane amount of asphalt, which was just empty. And I think this was a bit surprising to us to start the day like that. But maybe we thought that more people would come. So we had to get to the main entrance. There was quite a line of taxis waiting. What we've seen first was the massive building with Velociraptor coaster on the outside.
But then actually, when you get to the hall itself, you see that the hall looks pretty insignificant, I would say. It looks a bit like a shopping mall. It doesn't really give you a beautiful decorated or themed entrance or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say it's a little bit plain and you don't really know what to expect yet once you're in front of it.
I would even say it feels a bit dated, the exterior, right? It feels a bit like 90s, 80s, 90s maybe.
Or yes, maybe the panels are also faded away already because of the sun.
But then we walked in and I was surprised by the amount of white blinking Christmas lights all around, mixed with music, Christmas music playing, mixed with the sound of very cheap Chinese dinosaurs. It was a very weird mix of things that were there at the entrance. And it was a bit, to me, it was a bit like, I hope that not the entire experience is like this.
Yes, but I think later it turned out that there is quite some Christmas decoration on the inside of the hall as well. So it wasn't just at the front, I think.
Yeah, I do have the feeling that when you actually walk into the hall and you see all those, I would say limited dinosaur animatronics, because they are very limited, they're very basic. I have the feeling that this whole area and the way that it's dressed up was absolutely not part of the original design. I don't know if you noticed, but this is also kind of a theme maybe in Dubai, is that when the park was set to open, you had an announcement and you had the guy introducing the opening show, and it's all in perfect American English.
Yes, I've noticed that everything in the park was actually in English, and the rides and description of the rides, it was never in Arabic. All the time, actually, it was in English.
It also was funny that when we walked up to the hall that you had this announcement of the guy saying, "Welcome to IMG Worlds of Adventure." And I don't exactly remember what the rest was, but I was thinking, like, this is so American, the way that this whole thing is set up, you know, and it's just in the middle of the desert. It feels like it was really built for foreigners, for the whole world, for international tourists and for visitors from all over the world, kind of expecting a Disney World experience. And yeah, it mm-hmm. you can see the ambitions shine through everything. The show itself, I mean, it was a very typical introduction with some dances, with some elves, with like some Christmas music, etc. But there was something funny happening. Do you remember what happened?
You mean the dwarves and the other characters that came to join the show?
Because you have like two portals, kind of, one on the right and one on the left, mm-hmm. behind the entrance square. And in the right portal, two walking characters appeared that you obviously could take a photo with. It was Captain America and Iron Man, very famous Marvel characters. But then on the left, also two walking characters appeared. And it was
dinosaurs.
Two dinosaurs, but with a Christmas hat on and with a scarf. And I didn't really understand. I mean, I do understand the dinosaurs, but I didn't really understand why to dress them up. It doesn't. It just looked so weird, and also the suit wasn't fitting so well, so it looked very awkward. And the kids absolutely immediately went to Captain America and Iron Man. But the dinosaurs, they were not so popular.
Maybe they were more recognizable as the characters for them.
And then we traditionally started the day with a nice coffee in the central area.
Yes, I just have the map open. So to give you the image of how it was laid out, the park is divided into five zones, and there are two of the five zones represent global brands like Cartoon Network and Marvel, as Lee mentioned before. But there is also IMG Boulevard Zone and the Lost Valley, which is about the dinosaurs adventure zone, and the IMG Kids Zone. And they are originally coming from IMG.
And we saw already on the map that it was possible to not always have to go back to IMG Boulevard, but to go from zone to zone in a kind of like a circular shape. And then it is time to go to the heart of the experience, the actual theme of the day, where we decided to experience the park when we actually look at the map and when you come into the park counterclockwise. So we first went to the right bottom on the map, so actually the first zone on your right hand when you come in, and that was the Marvel zone. Even though it's not the highest quality theming, it did impress me, the scale of the decoration. And I think the reason why it is impressive is because the roof is incredibly high, right? We were actually two architecture nerds looking up, and we were amazed by the structure that we were under.
That's true, because the hall is extremely impressive and it seems super tall. I'm not sure, I couldn't really find the information how tall is it, but maybe around 20 meters high. So it gives a lot of space for the decoration and theming to use the height that you mentioned. And this makes it look more impressive and more grand in a way.
Yeah, and the Marvel Zone is, of course, based on New York City. And they really managed to get this scale of the feeling that you actually walk around in a street with skyscrapers around you. And they really decorated it as if you are walking on streets and there are curbs and so sidewalks and curbs and traffic lights and pedestrian crossings. And it does feel like New York City, I have to say. And the skyscrapers are pretty impressive because they are really high. The decoration is very high. Mm-hmm. Although I do have to say also that it wasn't really well lit, right? It was a bit dark.
Yes, I think maybe it was planned, or this was a conscious decision, but the whole felt a bit grim, and in a way maybe it was making us a bit more tired after walking for a longer time.
There is one signature right in this area, and this was actually one of the first things that stood out to us, because when we were walking there we heard the screaming of people. But not continuously, but sometimes. And then when we walked a bit to the end of the zone, we saw that there is a spinning coaster here, themed around Spider-Man. And we were both like, all right, that's going to be the first ride we're going to do today. It's called Spider-Man Doc Ock's Revenge, I think it's called.
It was the first coaster that we've seen in the zone.
And heard.
Yes, exactly, because of the screaming sound. It was quite fun. We were a bit surprised by the queue line, because the queue line was not really fully decorative, I would say. Also, it looked a bit damaged in a way.
Yeah, it was even a bit dirty, and it was damaged, and yeah, that wasn't a great introduction to what the day had to offer.
But the coaster was really good. Was it a Mack coaster, by the way?
It's a Mack spinning, yeah.
Okay, so by Mack Rides.
So we recognized it.
Yes, and it was a very pleasant ride, very smooth and fun.
Yeah, we also noticed immediately when we walked in that this is a park where they make use of greeters, which is a very specific role for an employee. It's basically just an employee standing at the very entrance of an attraction, and they are basically just greeting you. So they just allow you to come in, and it's a very US approach. This is something that you would see in the big theme parks in the US, and I think that they literally copied the operations from those big parks in the US. And I don't really see a purpose for them here, but anyway, it did feel like there was a solid amount of employees in the park, and they were offering quite friendly service to us. Also, what stood out is that the zone has several shops. Actually, the zone has three shops even, the Marvel Zone, which seems like a lot, especially when you consider that there were almost no people in the park, like no visitors. But the funny thing was, I actually kind of needed a shop. Do you remember for what?
Yes, because you arrived to Dubai with no belt, so we had to look up for something, because it was the first day actually after your arrival, and I think you decided that you just need one for the rest of the traveling.
Yeah, so there was one shop which was called Marvel Vault, I think. And it was it's kind of like a collector shop. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to look for a belt right there. And I bought a belt, which is from, what was it again?
Tony Stark. It was with Tony Stark.
Tony belt. Stark belt. Yes, exactly. Very bad quality, by the way. But also, originally, it was really expensive, and it was now for much, much cheaper. And I'm really happy that I paid the new price, because it's not a great belt in any way. So from the Marvel area, we walked into the Lost Valley.
The Lost Valley Dinosaur Adventure Zone.
Ah, yes, the Lost Valley Dinosaur Adventure Zone. And this was actually, for me personally, it was one of the better looking zones when it comes to the decoration. I think in the Lost Valley, the architecture looked the best. So how does it feel for you?
The architecture was really good because there was wood and use of natural materials, so it looked quite authentic, I would say. And there we also did one of the coasters, the Predator from Gößlauer.
Yeah, the weird thing was when you walk into the zone, and we walked from the Marvel zone into this zone, you couldn't really see the coaster immediately. It was completely in the dark, even though it was standing there behind the fences. Mm-hmm. And I actually was under the impression that the coaster was closed. But then it started running and I was like, all right, so there's the next coaster on the list. Mm-hmm. I recognized the type of coaster when I saw the track layout and I was like, that's probably a Eurofighter from Gößlauer. And how did you experience that one?
Well, it felt much more intense than you could expect it, especially from a Gößlauer coaster, because this is what you mentioned. And I was like, okay, so it will be more a kiddie ride, because this kind of coasters I know from the supplier. But this one was totally different. It was much more a thrill ride and fully indoor. And it was, like you said, fully hidden. So it was difficult to estimate the thrill of it.
Yeah, what especially happened, I think, a moment that is iconic is that when we just got in, you wouldn't be able to see actually the coaster layout when you walked up to it and when we walked through the queue line. But then we got on the train, turned one corner, and then the lift is a completely vertical lift.
Yes, I remember. It looked quite scary. Once it was open to you and more visible, I was like, oh no, what did we agree to?
Yeah, and then the coaster itself, typical Eurofighter, it is quite intense. It's throwing you around. There's a lot of inversions and pretty hefty G-forces, I have to say. It's maybe not the most comfortable coaster, but it is quite an intense mm-hmm. ride.
It was quite shaky, I have to say.
Yeah, exactly. It's a bit sudden and it's a bit rough in some places. But anyway, this one was still a good one to wake us up to experience the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. And we continued throughout the zone because the one thing we did find out is that this zone doesn't only have one of the major coasters. It has actually two, and it immediately has the biggest coaster of the park.
True, and we've noticed that there was Velociraptor, the one we mentioned at the beginning, that was visible from the outside, because it was actually an outdoor coaster. So the station was located on the inside, but the whole coaster with the launch was on the outside. And this one was pretty intense as well, I have to say.
Yeah, we struggled a bit to find the entrance because it is very hidden in a corner. Although they did hang a banner with Velociraptor and arrows on it, I remember, but it was a bit clumsy. Mm-hmm. And then we actually arrived at the Velociraptor, and as you mentioned, it is a coaster that goes outside the hall, and you have this typical hybrid experience of an indoor theme park with an outdoor coaster. And the funny thing is that you actually board the ride, it turns around the corner and there was some sort of pre-show, and then the door opens and you fly outside of, because it was a launch, so you fly outside of the hall and you actually get a smack in the face because of the hot air outside. And it's such a weird experience.
Yes, especially that the hall is quite themed, but outside there is not so much. So you're just on the desert, on the field with not really a lot of decoration, I would say. Just the coaster truck.
Yeah, it's a typical coaster in the desert. The coaster, I think it used to be red, but now it's a bit pinkish because of the hot desert sun. Mm-hmm. So, I recognized it quite quickly. It is a Mack coaster, and it's exactly the same layout as Mack's Blue Fire in Europa Park. So for me, it was a very familiar ride experience, but for you it was the first time that you did a ride like this, and it's quite special, I have to say, to do Blue Fire in the desert, because the Blue Fire in Europa Park is themed like Iceland.
Oh, okay.
So that's a
completely opposite
180 degree difference, okay. Of course. Yeah. And then we continued in the zone, and there was one thing actually that stood out to me in this zone is we already mentioned before that the decoration here and the architecture, it felt most in place for me. It felt like this was the zone where they managed to get a bit more like plastered facades in with woodwork and fake plants and stuff. It actually looked quite well.
And the last attraction that we forgot to mention in the zone is the dark ride about the dinosaurs.
Ah, yes, because this zone has another major ride, which is called, what is it called?
The Forbidden Territory, is it this one?
I think it is actually the biggest dark ride that they have. And this was quite interesting, actually, maybe even surprising, but I think we can talk a bit more about that later. So after the Forbidden Territory, we made our way through the Lost Valley Zone, and this automatically brings you to the Cartoon Network Zone. And this is by far the most colorful zone, and it's especially tailored for kids.
Yes, I think it was quite a total design because everything was thought through in this zone and all the colors. I think the creative direction was actually from Cartoon Network to make sure that it all looks like it's supposed to look. And there was this cute ride that we've done with the flying vehicles. What was the name of the ride?
Adventure Time, the ride of Oo with Finn and Jake. This is the ride that we went on. It's like a suspended monorail that goes through the entire Cartoon Network zone. And yeah, it was very relaxing, very nice little ride. Although there is something that you can say about the actual scenes or the dark ride sections of this ride, but that's also something we can talk about a bit later. But it did give you a good overview of the Cartoon Network area, which is very colorful, very blocky, very... It felt very 90s to me. It felt a bit like, like a video clip from... or like those bumper videos from the MTV studios. When it was still on television in the 90s. And it had a very particular style. Also, this was very abstract, much more cartoony. And it still felt a bit weird that it was so empty. It was supposed to have a lot of fun and playing kids in it, but it was just really empty overall.
Mm-hmm. True. And the other attraction in the zone, I think it was the Powerpuff Girls. This one looked quite intense, I have to say, because it was those arms.
There is also the Amazing Ride of Gumball, which is a dark ride shooter, but unfortunately this ride was closed. So besides that, there was only a flat ride, there was a playground there, and there was the next thing was the Kid Zone, which is actually connecting the Cartoon Network Zone with the Central Boulevard. And the Kid Zone is where the kids just play, and they can, I think, do some workshops and get their face painted and make some statues and stuff like that. So it was not really for us.
Yes, but the Kid Zone was actually quite impressive with huge structure and extra slides. And I saw somewhere that the zone is 1,500 square meters. So it's quite big, actually, for the scale of it. And it has climbing walls and even a football pitch and some slides. So I think for the kids, it can be a nice area to play and use some energy.
Yeah, it's really like an indoor play area where they can go crazy. We did make our way through the park there, so we actually made the full circle, and we had the option to wait and to do the Haunted Hotel, which is a walkthrough attraction in the middle of the park. But this attraction was opening only at 3 o'clock, so it was already so close to 3 o'clock that we were like, maybe we should just wait, do this one, and then we can continue, because it didn't feel like we were ever going to come back soon to this park again. So, you know, it would have been a waste if we would just leave there. So we decided to eat something in the park.
We've ordered a lamb dish from the grill, and we've decided to share it because it was quite a big portion. And it was quite tasty, I have to say. We really enjoyed it. The service was also good in the restaurant, and everyone and the facilities around it.
Yeah, it was quite a lot of, actually a lot of service. A lot of people were in the restaurant, a lot of employees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, more than visitors.
Yeah. So then we finished our food, and then we made our way to the Haunted Hotel. And we stood in line there, and, well, we did have something to say about that, but I think also we can talk about that a bit later. But the way to describe it quickly is that the haunted hotel is basically like a permanent scare house where you just walk through.
But with live actors, so this was something a bit different to me.
And after we did the haunted hotel, we kind of ran out of time because we planned our day so that we could do two parks in one day. So we actually wanted to make our way as soon as possible to Motion Gate. And this meant that we still had to take a taxi and drive to Motion Gate. So we were on the brink of leaving IMG Worlds of Adventure, but I really, really wanted to do the other major dark ride in the park, which was closed during the beginning of the day. And this was the Avengers Battle for Ultron. And this was in the Marvel Zone, obviously. And we made our way to this ride, we did it, and I was really happy that we did it in the end, because that left quite a mark. I really liked that one. And then we get to the base, so the trail. So what do we take away from the experience? So what is it for you, Alex? Because I think for you, you even went in more blue than me, because I was a bit familiar with the project.
What was impressive was the hall, which was quite gigantic, with acoustic panels on the roof to make it more quiet. Also, what was intense were the coasters, and this we'll remember for sure, and the whole scale of the project. I think it was quite impressive. And how do you see it?
Well, I do have to say that I was a bit preconditioned by people talking about this project, because it has a pretty bad name, I think, in the theme park industry. People always talk about that it's a pretty bad park, but I have to be honest that it wasn't as bad, I think, as people might make it out to be. Definitely, of course, it is the scale is off of the park. You know, I think you cannot deny it. It is definitely built for a massive amount of visitors, but I don't think they ever reached that success. This is a major project, and this is a big theme park with a lot of famous IPs, and it's done quite well, I have to say. It's not on the level of a major theme park like Disney or like Universal, maybe even Efteling, Europa Park, definitely not. But it's also not bad.
True, it has quite some offer, and you can find FMB points, you can find different types of attractions for the small ones and the bigger ones. So I would say you can find everything in there.
Yeah, it does feel, however, though, that the park is pretty stagnant. I had the feeling that nothing major happened since its opening in 2016. I have the feeling that when you walk into IMG Worlds now, you see it almost as it was opened. And that's actually quite unique, because normally a theme park is, you know, reinventing itself, developing something new, opening something every other year or every 3 years. And here it feels like we still get kind of a look into the past, where in 2016, this was even back then impressive, but it hasn't evolved. And that is surprising to me. I think maybe in this case, the IPs are the saving grace, because I'm really wondering that if it was without the IPs, if you would still give it the same pass on certain things. Like, for example, the Marvel IP, the fact that they have the rights to this IP, I don't really understand how this happened, because it opened in 2016, and back then, Marvel was already owned by Disney. And I know that Disney is not keen on seeing other theme parks with their IP, so there must be something there with an old contract or with some sort of legal matter that they were still able to open this. Because I have the feeling that this was something that you would never see happen again. That there will be a theme park somewhere in the world who still opens a Marvel Zone. It is definitely way more than just an amusement park or just a coaster park. It is very decorated. It is very themed, and it has IPs and it has storylines.
Massive hall and height.
Yeah, it's a big project. It's still an interesting thing to see and to visit. And I still think you get quite a lot in the entire package.
We had a good time, and we've stayed there longer than we initially planned, so it wasn't too bad, I would say. But I wouldn't say that there was something or that there happened something that I will remember for extremely long. Like, it wasn't that memorable to me, I think.
I have the feeling that this park, and that's quite unique actually, has almost zero emotional impact. I did also notice that maybe the IPs that they have and in the form that they have it didn't leave me really wanting for more. It didn't really spark new interest into Cartoon Network or something, or heightened interest into Marvel.
Mm-hmm. This is the risk that the park has to take when they go for the IPs, that unfortunately the trends are changing and something that seems to be popular right now might not be popular in a time. And then it's kind of a loss because the young generation is not so eager to visit this specific IP.
So I'm really curious to actually hear your professional view on this project through the eyes of an architect.
So to me, what was standing out was definitely the scale of the project. As we mentioned before, this huge parking lot, but also the hall. The park is over 140,000 square meters, which is a huge area. The height of the hall is also quite impressive. The park is open all year round and it's fully indoor, besides only the coaster going on the outside. And I looked a little bit into the numbers to check also the scale of the project. And the hall is definitely impressive because of the height and the low number of supports. And if there are any supports, they are well integrated in the theming, so they are not really obstructing the view. We didn't really notice them a lot. And the hall has great acoustics due to the acoustic panels on the ceiling. And I would say they give an impression of scales in a way. So they also create some kind of atmosphere in the hall. I am curious about your professional point of view as a themed entertainment professional.
Well, I think what is interesting about this project is that they chose to make the interior space all interconnected. And it was not one big roof or one big dome, but it still felt like it was one big space that you were continuously in. And it's quite an ambition to put such a big roof span, like you mentioned, with in general quite a lack of columns. Actually, it was a really, really big roof span over the entire theme park. But I think the end result of that is that they chose for a kind of a black box idea, where what is black is not there. And the inside of the roof, the bottom of the roof was very dark, and it made the park feel a bit grim. Mm-hmm. And it, you kind of felt this lack of light a bit after a while. I don't know how you experienced it, but I actually liked to go outside again and to get some mm-hmm. light, because it was just so dark throughout the entire day. There was a general lack of nature or landscaping or foliage or greenery or
water bodies.
Yeah, water bodies. It could really use more for a human being to feel more comfortable, I think.
What I also found is the fact that the hall has the capability to accommodate around 20,000 visitors daily, and this is really, really big amount. If you would like to put it into the context, 20,000 is actually a scale of quite a big theme park in Europe.
And this is a very good example of something that you see, a phenomenon that you keep on seeing in Dubai. The full project is built from A to Z. And I don't think that's the right approach to do something like this, because it is way safer to actually build it and to see how you can develop it according to the demands and the needs of the project. So in this case, they built this entire project in one go. And as you mentioned, it's really built for massive, massive amounts of people. But then when the people stay away, it feels awkward. It feels off. It feels like the project has never been really used as it was intended.
Because of that, I would say the park feels a bit overscaled for the amount of visitors, especially for the amount of visitors that we've noticed on the day of our visit.
I think that's a very typical approach of the projects that we keep on seeing in Dubai, is that they always have so much margin or so much space or so much scale in many of their real estate developments that when it is not fully filled up, it just feels empty and it feels a bit void, and it feels even sometimes a bit apocalyptic in a way.
The size of the pathways was quite wide and everything felt a bit spread out. And also, it didn't give us the specific pleasantness of roaming around because it felt a bit abandoned.
And I have the feeling that this park, with its massive queue lines, like really some of the rides, like the dark rides, but also the Velociraptor coaster, has such an incredibly long queue line that when the queue line is not full, you keep on just walking past empty meandering, mm-hmm. like past empty fencing. And it is designed in a way that you're actually faced the whole day with the overskilled design. I think it would have been safer if they would have designed a more design day approach. And design day is a term that we use in the theme park industry, where that's kind of the day that you aim for when you're with your design intent. And then you have like peak moments when you actually need more capacity than that. But overall, you also have a lot of moments when the capacity is much lower in your park. And I have the feeling that in this park, you see this full capacity as a potential, but it's not utilized. So it's a bit of waste of space, I would say. So let's go to the segment Room for Improvement. So we want to be generally very positive in this podcast, but we also want to point out the things that you can probably act upon to really improve the experience. And there are so many things in this park that I think could improve the experience massively. So what do you see as room for improvement, Alex?
Well, for me, I think the main thing was the staff, because the staff was extremely friendly. But as you mentioned before, the operations were extremely, extremely slow, and we had to wait for quite some time. A perfect example is the Haunted Hotel.
Yeah, we already waited. We kind of were hanging around in the park because we wanted to wait until 3 o'clock. And we were, I'm pretty sure we were dead on 3 o'clock. We were in the queue line and there was almost no one in front of us. And we only saw, I think, about two groups go in. And it just took so long before it was our turn. It was even so long that I was almost ready to just turn around. And we noticed that there were so many employees there. There were so many operators just walking in front of the attraction back and forth. And I didn't really understand why there were so many employees there. And it was just not moving.
And I think this was taking a bit of charm from the experience. And definitely this could be easily improved.
Yeah, I think what was really lacking, or what was really under par, I would say, was the lighting design. Mm. Because I noticed that the park is very dark, you know, that's a very conscious decision, that the park is a very dark environment where almost everything, or actually everything, is done with artificial lighting. And I noticed that the lighting was very flat.
I didn't really see the artistic light, the theatrical light there.
There were generally just a bunch of white lights, and they were actually lighting up their surroundings. But they were not really used, the lights, as like architectural lighting that was integrated into the scenery. There were some lights in the scenery here and there. Like, for example, there were some diegetic lights. There were even some traffic lights, some lanterns and stuff like that. That was all there. But there was little effort in actually lighting the whole place up, everything in a more atmospheric, colorful, maybe even light that could actually bring the depth and the shapes more out. I have the feeling that overall the light was very generic. It was very stale and it was pretty flat. And I also see the choices that they make with the roof as a reason for that, because they had no lights hanging under the roof. That was a very conscious decision, but you kind of missed those theatrical light fixtures. And did you also notice that?
Yes, I think maybe this was done in a way that you didn't pay too much attention to the roof. So the roof was way darker and then the rest was lit. But I know what you mean. It felt a bit dark in a way.
The other thing that I noticed also was the show programming was in some places really bad. Like I noticed that there was a really big deviation in sound levels, for example. Mm-hmm. In the Spider-Man attraction, the Doc Ock's Revenge ride, I noticed that the characters were talking. Like Spider-Man said something, Doc Ock said something. It was actually really difficult to understand what they were talking about. Mm-hmm. There was a dialogue, but I didn't catch anything that they said.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice?
Talking about the sound, there was also a moment in a dark ride that was so loud in a way that it felt just too loud even in a moment, like uncomfortable.
Yeah, this was the Adventure Time, the ride of Ooh with Finn and Jake, which sounds like an incredibly long title. I actually looked it up and I thought it was maybe one of the longest names for an attraction in the theme park industry. But I did find that Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure has more characters than this one. I really checked it. This ride had on-ride sound in the vehicles, which was very soft, so very low. But uh-huh. then it also had in-scene sounds. And this was so loud that yes. it was really uncomfortable. It was like it was completely not balanced.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you talk about show programming, this is all about, I mean, it's even in the words, it's all about programming. They can really improve this. If there was just a professional looking into this, they can really improve this stuff. And I really hope that they do something about it. For me, a point for room for improvement. I think the Christmas overlay is not doing the park any good. The Christmas decoration feels cheap, it feels misplaced, and it was very kitsch. I hope that this park would get some sort of onboard art director or maybe even a remote art director who comes by every now and then and who keeps an eye on actually the visual quality of the park, because it really needs something like that. And then we get to the grumpy minutes. We can talk about something that was really annoying, for example. So it's time to blow off some steam, Alex. What do you have in your grumpy minutes?
Actually, I have a couple of things. The first one is what we've mentioned before, that the hall feels in general quite empty in terms of space, being overscaled, and also lack of people on the inside. The second thing that was quite surprising to me was the upkeep, because it was quite bad as well. And sometimes we could see writings on the wall and people just didn't really respect the space and the queue lines. Like, for example, with the spinning coaster, the walls were just completely hand-painted and there were some letters and text on them. And I was just surprised to see that because
names, yeah.
I've never seen something like that in a theme park, that people would just not respect the space in the way.
So the other thing I have to blow off some steam about is that we actually really enjoyed a nice meal when we were having good food at the end of the afternoon. And while we were enjoying this meal and the service was nice, the food was good, we were sitting there. Then it was time for a very obnoxious parade that was going through the IMG Boulevard. And there was no way to escape this parade. This parade was so incredibly loud. The parade had like park-wide music. So it means that the parade is actually taking over the music system or the speaker system in the space where they are right then. And while we were eating, we tried to have a conversation, but this parade music was so loud that we were shouting to actually speak to each other. And I was thinking, again, this is one of those examples. This is show programming. Someone should change this. It's so obnoxious, really. And I think it's also very unpleasant to have a parade take over the music and the sound inside restaurants and bars and cafes. You know, it's so unnecessary. I think if you would stand along the road and watch the parade, then yes, you want the music and you want to be involved. But if you're actually inside a restaurant, you don't want to be involved in something like that. You might be actually consciously trying to hide for something like that. So yeah, that was very particular.
Last but not least is that the park is quite pricey for what it has to offer. Actually, the price is 365 dirhams right now. which is about 90 euros. And I do understand that because they do have the IPs, but I think it's quite a high price for a day in a park.
Yeah, definitely. When you talk about price, you know, when you look at the park as it is right now, yes, it's not such a bad park. And yes, it can probably keep people in for a pretty long period of time and people can have fun. But I totally agree with you. This 365 dirhams or 90 euros is absolutely insane as an entrance price for a park like this. If you compare that to many of the theme parks that we are familiar with in Europe, where you can go for less money to a Fantasialand, Europa Park, Efteling, for a little bit more money, I assume, but not always. I think for the same price, you can actually go to Disneyland Paris throughout a solid part of the year. Then it is it's absolutely not in check, I have to say.
Yeah, it feels a bit much.
But okay, that's maybe enough negative from us now. And I think it's a good moment to talk about highlights, because this park also has a couple of really amazing highlights. We have to be honest about that.
One of the highlights was the impressive hall from the inside and its scale. From the attractions, I would definitely choose Velociraptor and the Dinosaur Dark Ride. And also, I would say the food was pretty, pretty tasty.
Yeah, the food was very nicely spiced and it was really nice. It was, I think we had rice with, what was it?
A rice with a lamb.
With lamb, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was a nice portion to share and it was really good. For the theme park, I would say quite surprisingly good.
I think overall the theming is generally quite kitsch, maybe a bit fake, not really authentic, but there was a particular part in the park where I was thinking like, wow, that is so well done. It stood out like crazy. And I'm talking about the Finn and Jake attraction, and there is a rockwork structure there, which is in the shape of the tree from the series. Do you remember that one?
Yes, but I'm curious now.
So this tree is incredibly well made, and it's actually impressive how they built this thing with a structure, like a steel structure, and with the rock art, with the colors, with the shaping, the texture, the staircase that is inside, and the queue line that is on the top. It was really an impressive structure, I have to say. It is one of the best of those massive trees in a kid zone, because it's a bit of a thing in many theme parks that there is a colorful tree in a kid zone. It has this complicated shape as it was depicted in the series, in the animated series. Really well done. Another highlight for me is definitely the dark ride, the Forbidden Territory. I didn't expect this dark ride there, especially not from this level. And yeah, maybe it's not, still, it's not the best or even one of the best dark rides that I've done ever, but still, the ride system was amazing. Do you remember that?
It was very smooth and very comfortable.
It was a Jeep. It was decorated as a Jeep. And you were going on a mission to find eggs from a certain dinosaur. And this Jeep, this ride system, was doing insane things. It was able to turn around. It was able to go backwards. It really made you feel as if you were losing grip in like a wet, muddy road. And it was spinning at some point, and it was like it was able to do pitching and to do. It felt really like you were riding a Jeep in a forest. It was very impressive. And then the other highlight definitely was the dark ride Battle for Ultron. This was the very last attraction we did here, and I was absolutely not expecting this. This dark ride was really, really well done, especially for this park. I think many theme parks would be very jealous for a dark ride like this. The dark ride system itself felt like a simulator, and it was interacting with screens and with lighting effects and even with some special effects along the ride, and it was generally really well done. This was really a dark ride that you would expect in a major American theme park.
So I would agree with you that one of the better highlights were also the dark rides to me and the dinosaur part.
So then we go to our rating. We normally rate the theme parks according to the theme park review form, and we really take our time to rate it on all these different aspects and elements. But before we go into the actual rating, we also have an initial rating. And I was kind of estimating this park to be around a 6, which is an okay rating. And how did you see it?
Exactly the same. For me, it was also 6, to be honest. But I'm curious, what did we rate it on the paper?
I turned out to give the park an end score of a 6.4. So that's actually okay. Very close to my initial score. Mm-hmm. And you gave the park a 5.76.
Okay, that's actually... I do agree with that.
So for me, it was an okay park. For you, it was like just under okay. So yeah, that proves that we were not blown away mm-hmm. or anything by the park. But so that leaves us to talk about trip off, consider, or trip on. So what is it for you?
So according to the rating as well, I'm between trip off and consider. And maybe I'll just consider, but... it's definitely not my first choice in Dubai. We've decided to go there because of the profession that we have and because of our interest in theme parks. But to be honest, if I wouldn't be from the industry, I'm not sure if I would go there. So then it would be trip off. So I can understand that many people skip this park.
Yeah, I think I have to say trip off too. Because I think the main reason why we went there was because of our knowledge of the project and because of our interest in the industry in particular.
Mm.
Besides the fact that, you know, the IPs could be interesting for people, I don't really see a reason to particularly make a trip to this park specifically. I think especially for the price of
yeah,
the entrance.
Yeah, exactly.
I think you can go to... way, way, way better theme parks all over the world.
Yes.
I have the feeling that this park also will age
badly.
Pretty poorly.
Yes.
It already does a bit. It already feels like it is going backwards quite rapidly. And I have the feeling that it might be more for the locals now. And that's a pity because it was never meant to be like that. So, what's next? Well, interestingly, we are not giving up when it comes to indoor theme parks with the IMG one, because on the same day, we went from IMG to Motion Gate, which means we did 2 theme parks in a day, which is, you know, exactly against my principles, because normally I would not do that. But in this case, I think it was possible to do it because IMG was so calm.
Mm-hmm.
And there were not really long queues, etc. So we were able to experience it let's say, half a day. On the same day, we took the taxi and we made our way to Motion Gate. I think Motion Gate was on every level a step up.
Much more interesting. So the next episode is going to be about the Motion Gate.
And that leaves us to say, as always, our tip.
Go on and plan your next trip.